Today's daf in Masechet Yevamot, brought to you from Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh in these happy days of Chol HaMoed Pesach, Tav Shin Pei Beit, is daf Mem Beit, and we're holding on the second day of the Omer. We're holding on the penultimate line, actually, on daf Mem Aleph Omud Beit. So, Tana Rabbana, Yevamashe Chotzula Achin Betoch Shelosha, Tzricha Lamtin Shelosha Chodashim. So what we've been speaking about until now is this halacha of not getting married after a woman was married to someone else without waiting for 3 months. So we had two different halachas about this. One of them was specifically in terms of a yevama, and there were all the various questions that we had about the possibility of her actually being pregnant and having a viable child, and how that would cause him to be over on an Isser of Eishes Ach Shelo B'Makom Mitzvah. And then we had the further questions of whether a Yibum that is, before we spoke about Yibum as well, but you were talking about Chalitza that was performed with a woman who is pregnant, whether it's considered to be chalitz or not, that machlokas between Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan, all kinds of issues that we dealt with earlier. And now we're just talking about the idea of both legabe the yevama and legabe any woman who had been previously married and therefore might be currently pregnant, to make sure that there is a 3-month waiting period before after the death of the husband or after the divorce from a husband and the subsequent either yibum or marriage. And we talked about the variations. What if she had only been an arusa before? Or what if she had been a nesua? What if she's currently still a virgin? And so on. Now, these were all questions that we had in the Mishnah. We had a machloket. Remember whether this halacha of waiting 3 months applies even for a virgin or even for a woman who is about to enter into a relationship only of erisin and not of nesuin. Fine. What we'd like to find out now is what would be the din if Lamaisa, the brothers, did go ahead. They did give her chalitza. How much time does she still need to wait before she's able to marry someone else? So normally a yevama l'shuk. Now she's mutarit, and she would go out. The question is this measured from the time of the chalitza that there's supposed to be a 3-month break, or is it measured from the time that the husband dies? And we're going to see that when it comes to a divorcee, that's not such an obvious question. So Tana Rabbanan, Yevama shechotzula achim betoch shlosha. In this case, the yevama got shalokedin. The brothers went ahead, gave her chalitza. They didn't wait the requisite 3 months. It turns out she wasn't pregnant. There was no problem. But the question is, how much time did she need to wait? So you would think that she waits 3 months from the death of her husband, even though she got the chalitza, a month after the death of her husband. And in fact, that is the halacha. As long as it's 3 months, then it's not 3 months from the chalitza, it's 3 months after the death of her husband. But if she got the chalitza after the 3 months, she doesn't have to wait at all, which means that the measurement of the 3 months is not from the chalitza, it's from the death of the husband, and only from the death of it. So have, which proves to you, says the Gemara, that the shlosha chodashim sha'amru misha'at mitat ha'baal v'lo misha'at chalitzat ha'yavam. That means we measure it only from the death of the husband who died and not from the chalitza. But the problem is that, remember, we've been talking all along here about the similarity of yibum to gittin, right? And that led to all kinds of dinim, such as the gezeira that any relative of a chalutza, achot chalutzato, or ima, whatever, is all going to be usher. And even we had the din of the tzara of the chalutza, because it looks like the equivalent of a gerushin. So why is it that by gerushin, it is not universally accepted that the 3 months begin from the time that they are no longer relating to each other, the husband and the wife? So the question over there is like this. There it's a machlokas. Rav says, by the get, it's from the time that you give the get. and not from the time of the cessation of relationship between her and her husband. So maybe it's been years. Maybe they've been in court. Maybe she's been living in a different city. She has nothing to do with her husband. It took her 10 years to get the get. Rav says, wait 3 months after the get to see if she's pregnant. That's weird. But anyway, but if that's what Rav says, so then why don't we wait 3 months after the chalitza? So that's our problem. So anyway, there Rav says, Misha'at netina. And Shmuel says, Misha'at ketiva. Why is it Misha'at ketiva? Because the halacha is, if you recall, that once someone has written a get, he's not allowed to sleep with that woman, because then the get becomes a get yashan. And a get yashan, he would have to go and get a whole other get written. So because of that, says Shmuel, once he had the get written, we do not have to worry that he got her pregnant. So you only have to wait from that time, the 3 months, to see when the pregnancy, if she was pregnant or not. Whereas according to Rav, no. It's one takana, and the takana is from the end of the marriage with the get. But if that's true, we say the whole time we've been going through this sugya is that the chalitza is the equivalent of the get. So then why wouldn't Rav say about the chalitza, even though obviously the Avama did not get pregnant from her first husband after he was dead, but Rav says that you go according to the point at which you end the first marriage. And the first marriage, in the case of Rav, ended with a get, and in this case, it ended with chalitza. So why not keep the halachas the same? Says Rava, because Rav cannot make it the same. Because if he did make it the same, he would be laughed out of the court. And therefore, since he would be laughed out of the court, that is called a chukah v'tlula. Chukah v'tlula is, since Tosafos understands here, a chukah v'tlula is something which appears to people to be so absurd that it's a reduction in the status of the Beit Din that issues such a ruling. And the bigger problem here is that if something is a chukah v'tlula, it will not be accepted as a gezeira. Remember, we do not make any takanas that are not acceptable. It looks too dumb. And the reason it looks dumb is because people will say, I don't understand. You told a guy to go ahead and to do yibum after 3 months from the husband's death, right? And that's an iser karis. If, in fact, she is pregnant and she does have a child, you said it's okay because I know now that she wasn't pregnant from her husband. So on that, you relied on the death. But over here, where the only problem is, is that if you allow this yavama to get married before 3 months from the death, and instead you say, no, it's got to be 3 months from the chalitza, what's going to be if Lamaisa, she ended up marrying, that was 3 months, and she ended up being pregnant? What's the big deal? The worst that's going to happen is that she is going to be a yavama who got married without yibum. That's an iser lav. So when it came to the Yisr Lav, there you said, oh my gosh, you need to wait 3 months after the actual giving of the chalitza. But in order to be miyabim her, which is an Yisr Karis if she's pregnant, there you said 3 months is enough. Forget it. I mean, that is so stupid. So because of that, Rav has no choice but to be moida that in a case where you're dealing with Yibum, then obviously it's going to be 3 months from the death, because the Yibam is 3 months from the death. Okay, now, the Mishnah said that this din of waiting for 3 months is not only true of a Yibam, it's true of any person who marries a woman who is married to another man. Now, I understand, what's the big deal? Why is she married to the other guy? No. And if she's pregnant from the other guy, so it's what? It's like she's married to them? I don't understand what the issue is. I mean, I understand the Yavama. A Yavama, like we said, what if she's pregnant? And then it turned out that he went ahead and he was over and he married Eshet Achiv, Shaloba Moka Mitzvah. And we even answered the Chalitza because Kala Elala Yivam, Elala Chalitza with Rabbah. All the discussion we had yesterday, fine. But what in the world does that have to do with answering a woman who is not related in any way? You want to marry a woman who was previously married. What's the big deal? And if she's pregnant, you're doing something wrong because you're marrying a woman who's pregnant? Am I? Why do we need to know if she was pregnant? Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Shmuel, it's because of an amazing din. And this is very nogea, this Pesach, exactly the whole holiday of Pesach and the bris with Avram Avinu. What was that bris with Avram Avinu? V'hakimoti et briti beniu v'necho v'en zaracha acharecha l'dorotam l'britolam liyot l'cha l'elohim ule zaracha acharecha. And note that the mitzvahs of the talking at the Seder to those children were zaracha acharecha. It was not, remember we were medagas, it does not include talmidim, even though talmidim are bunim. But they're not biological bunim. They're not born of your semen. And therefore, they're not zaracha, which means literally your seed. So if that's the point, what is the bris with Avram Avinu? Forget about the issue of whether you're calling it your child. It has to be an absolutely clear expression of your own biology. Now, this is an amazing halacha. So that means that the bris with Avram Avinu of I will be the God of your children, Le'elohim le'zaracha acharecha. And this was all established with that, Rosh Hashanah, through Pesach and the building of the Mishkan and so on. If I cannot establish that this child was born directly of your sperm, I will not be Mashra Mashkina on him. So I don't understand, but he was born of one of Avram Avinu's children's sperm. Who cares whose it is? No, because it has to be something that can be traced biologically. That's what we're saying. Therefore, if this woman is pregnant from her previous husband, I don't care if he's the Gadol Hador. The point is, if I'm not going to be able to establish whether he is that person's child or your person's child, then that child will not be part of the guarantee of the Shekhinah being Sheira on that door. That's astonishing. So therefore, we are mechayev you to wait so that we will know whose zera this is. That's the whole thing. And therefore, we need to know, lafchin ben zar'o shel rishon lezar'o shel sheni, and there's nothing we can do except put off the marriage so that it will become absolutely clear whether she was pregnant from the first husband or from the second husband. Isn't that an amazing thing? Isn't that amazing? Absolutely astonishing. The clarity of the idea of how central biology is and the whole Maisa Bereishis and the Yerusha of Dor Achar Dor, specifically through biology, the clarity of what it means to have the Yichus of Yisrael. It's not a question of, oh, what's the difference? He's Jewish, a fine Jewish child. It doesn't work that way. So Masiv Rava. Rava asked on this Shita from the Braisa, because it says in the Braisa, that because we have this general halacha of waiting 3 months, so then a ger and a giyoret, so if a male and female who are goyim become gerim together, so then you would say, well, the family that prays together stays together, you know, but doesn't work that way. They need to separate for 3 months before they're allowed to sleep together again, because we need to know whether she was in fact pregnant before. Now, if the issue over here is to establish biology, well, we've established the biology, haven't we? I mean, it's the same guy who was the first husband and the second husband. I mean, that makes a joke of this. You're claiming the whole point over here is establishing the actual biological father. Well, over here, it's the same guy as the first husband and the same guy as the second husband. And the only difference was that the first time around as a husband, he was not Jewish, and the second time he is Jewish. But we know biologically who the child is. So why are we saying that we need to put it off? It doesn't make sense. Answers the Gemara, it certainly does. I mean, you're asking me, why do I need to establish whose semen it is? It is absolutely essential, because if the whole idea is, in fact, the Hashra'at HaShchinah on the child, then the issue over here would be to establish that that semen at that time was, in fact, already part of the biology that was coming from Avram Avinu, because remember, a ger also comes from Avram Avinu. And now we're going to say, well, yeah, but so it's the same guy. No, it's not the same guy, Because even though you'll say, but I don't understand, make up your mind. Are we dealing with biology or are we dealing with some kind of religious issue? Is this a question of genes or is it a question of memes? Ah, that is the major mistake that everyone makes about this thing. The idea of the Kedusha of the Zera is something that actually is defined not by simple biology, but biology within the context of the entire drive of my separations to achieve a certain level of human, which has to go through those steps of becoming what Avram was, Yitzchak was, Yaakov was, and so on and so forth. So if someone is mitgayer, then magically that is given to him in terms of the Yashras Hashchina, and he was Emet on Har Sinai. But we can't say that just because now this guy is a Yisrael, that therefore we can biologically call his first child from prior to that a Yisrael in the same way. It's not Zera Acharav in terms of Avram Avinu. Therefore, when was that seed provided? That's the point. So if it was Nizra B'Kedusha, or was it Nizra Shelo B'Kedusha? For that, we need to wait 3 months. Rava Amar, Rava says, that's, look, you guys are getting all into, you know, you give me the heebie-jeebies with all of this stuff. I mean, it's very simple. Isn't it just Nogea, simple halacha? Like, what do we have to get into the Hasidic explanation over here? Which reminds me that the Gabbai seems to have neglected the Rebbe this morning. I don't understand what's happening. Is it not Chol HaMoed in Antwerp? I don't know. I hope he's got a good explanation. But anyway, I think he's smiling to say he tried his best. But in any event, the idea over here is very simple, says Rava. I mean, like, what does it have? What does it have to do with spirituality? Why can't we just talk about it in terms of straight out halacha? Okay. We need to establish paternity. That's what we're saying. Now you're asking me, why do we need to establish paternity? I'm talking about the Iker Gezerah. Forget about the specific case of the Ger V'Giorah. Now, you started this whole thing about Avram Avinu and the Bris with Avram Avinu. I think it's very simple. If we don't know the actual paternity biologically, we could end up with four very serious situations, each of which will lead a person to be over on an Isser D'Oraisa, sometimes an Isser of Kores, sometimes an Isser of Lav. I mean, imagine what might happen over here. This kid who does not know who he is. Now, he's grown up in this home, and it's been taken for granted since he was a child that the second husband is daddy, right? Okay, so second husband is daddy. Let's imagine a case. The first husband married somebody else, and he has a daughter. 20 years later, little boy who's calling husband B daddy meets the girl who has this inexplicable attraction to him. Mm-hmm. I wonder why. It's his sister. Okay. So now he's going to go ahead and marry her because she's the daughter of another guy who has no relation to him. And he ends up marrying his sister because little does he know it, but he was really the child of husband one. I think that's a pretty serious way to mess up a life, don't you, says Rava? So isn't that a good idea to know the paternity? Or let's imagine another case, right? He might go ahead and be miyabim an eshes ach, who is an eshes ach only from the same mother. How did that happen? Very simple. I mean, obviously, he believes that husband B is daddy. And so what happens over here, another son of daddy who's born after him from the same mother that he had, but not from the same father, little does he know it, his father is really husband A. And now that child goes and gets married. 30 years later, he dies, leaving this woman right in front of him for Yibum. And he is gratified to be able to be Mekayim this mitzvah, to be making shame al achiv hamet. There's only one problem. It's not his paternal brother. It's only his maternal brother. So it would be much better if he wasn't a brother at all, because then he wasn't going to be over on Isser Kores. But by giving Yibum to a maternal brother, Shalom B'Makom Mitzvah, so now he's been spending his life with this woman who is an Isser Kores on him. No good. Isn't that a good enough reason, says Rava, to make sure we know the paternity over here? Okay, I'll give you another thing that might happen. His mother is going to go out, and as the Avama will marry someone as the Avama Lashuk. Why is that? Well, I mean, because obviously, what happens if husband too? Daddy! No daddy of his, but little does he know. So husband too dies, and mommy says, well, I don't need Yibum from husband too, because here's my little boy. He's a big man now. I'll go and marry somebody else. But little does anybody know that her little boy is not his little boy, and therefore she is a Yevama, and she's going out and getting married without Yibum or without Chalitza. No good, okay? Good enough reason, says Rava. What do we need all of this stuff about Brisa Shel Avraham Avinu? And then imagine another case like that. He may end up being pottering his Yevama. Let's say the first husband, the husband we've been calling husband A, has got another son. That other son is a brother to him. Now that brother went ahead. He never knew him. He has absolutely no idea that he's got a brother because he doesn't realize that husband A is daddy. If that brother marries and he dies without any children, then he is supposed to be Miyabim, that brother, because he is that brother's paternal brother. But he's announcing that he's not related to that brother. And so the wife of that brother from the husband A will have no idea that she is a Yavama. And she will say, well, there were no other brothers that were born. And therefore, she can simply go and marry whomever she wishes. And that, too, is a bad enough issue, says Rava, than any of the things you're bringing up. We've got serious problems of Erava, and therefore, we have to be worried about it. And even in the case of the Giyur, we've still got the problem that the child may end up marrying a Eshes Ochiv Mi'imo, because he might assume that he was actually the post-Giyur conception, and that therefore he is really related to this other boy. But in reality, it was the pre-Giyur conception, not really related to this boy, because at that point, that Zera is not considered to be significant because it's coming from a non-Yisrael. And because of that, he's going to go ahead and he's going to marry B'Yibum, thinking that they are brothers when they are really halakhically, they do not have a din of being brothers Min'av. Now, Rashi says that the reason is, however, I must tell you that the Mefarshim on Rashi claim that this is a stam, some idiot who wrote in a pshat in Rashi that is not real. It's a machlokas where there's a way to make this work out. That the reason that he's not considered to be a ach from the father is because before the giyur, we consider all of the non-Yisrael to be too sexually active with other people, and therefore we don't know who the father was. That's the issue. In reality, the issue is the fact that the biology will not determine the halachic paternity. Okay, so anyway, says Rava, look, it's very simple. That's why you need to wait 3 months, and I don't know why we need to find anything else. Masiv Rav Chananya, so Rav Chananya said, well, I got a big problem with your pshat, because we have a braita that says, all of the cases are because, now the cases it's referring to over here all mean all of the Yevamot. What do you mean all of the Yevamot? You know, whether they came from Erisin, they came from Nisuin, or they're Betulot, that's what it means. It doesn't mean all the cases, even including the non-Yibum cases. All of the Yevamot. The reason that we have this idea of waiting 3 months is because of the problem of Erva. Well, obviously, I mean, she may turn out to be an Eshes Achshav, but et cetera, all the problems we had. And if it's not that Erva, it could be the Erva of Yevam Lashuk, so we need to take care of those cases. But we always knew that, Rava. The problem is that you are claiming that all of the cases are Bishum Erva. You're claiming that we made this Takana in order that person shouldn't marry his own sister, or he shouldn't be Matir Yevam HaLashok, and so on and so forth. So then it was all for Erva, but the Braita says that all the other issues, marrying a woman who was previously married, nothing to do with Yibum, over there it's for the child's sake. Mishum takanat avlad. Now, the way we're understanding things, not like you, where you're making fun of our Hasidic approach, that is, in fact, what the Braita is saying. That it's because of the takana of the vlad, to be sure that he is shayich tashras hashchina, and so on. That's the takana of the vlad. But if you are right, so then the ones for the child are also mishum erva. And here it says it's not mishum erva. Says the Gemara, no. The takanas of vlad, says Rava. What do you think takanas of vlad means? To make him a better chassid. Takanas of vlad means that the child shouldn't come to erva. Like I was explaining, in the first cases, it was that the principal people, the actors over here, that they themselves might be pergei be'erva. These other cases are problems that the child later in life may end up being pergei be'erva or matir erva in terms of a yavam l'shuk. That's why we make the differentiation. One is referring to them, and one is referring to the shayla. Okay. All right, now I accept it. So now I understand. I do not understand the biology very well, however, because, look, I understand why we can't let her, let's say, just wait 2 months and then get married. Yes, because that's the issue. Are we dealing with a 9-month gestation from husband A, or are we dealing with a 7-month gestation from husband B? And if she waited 2 months, then the 7-month gestation would appear like a 9-month gestation, right? So that's the problem. Obviously, she can't just wait 2 months, because our suffix was, is she a 9-month gestation child to the first husband, or is this a 7-month gestation child to the second husband? But now remember, again, we're talking about two separate biological phenomena, which we do not any longer have. This was something that was recorded in antiquity all over, that there were gestation periods of 7 months in which the child matured rapidly, but they're not a 7-month that then is delayed until then. That's not how it works. It's two completely different gestations. So we don't know which one we have. But what if she would just wait 1 month, okay? If she wait 1 month and she would get married, so then we could say if a child is born after 7 months, so then we know that this is a 7-month child from husband B. Now, that obviously is not really true, because, as Rashi points out, I mean, she could have gotten pregnant before 2 months before her husband died, in which case this would be a 9-month to the first one. Okay, but we're doing a shortcut here because we deal with that issue later anyway. So we didn't bother pointing that out. Okay. So then if she's able to deliver after only 7 months, so then we know that this is a 7-month gestational baby to husband B. But if she gives birth after 8 months, so then if it's after 8 months, so then what we must have over here is that it is the 9-month of husband A, because an 8-month baby, again, remember, this is a change in biology, which we find very often, that in those days, they never were able to deal with a preemie. If it was born in the 8th month, the child would not survive. So if she gives birth after 8 months, it's got to be a 9-month baby. And therefore, so if it would be in the 8th month, it would have to be 9 months from the first baby, from the first child. So all we need to do is wait a month. And if she's got a child after 7 months, so then we know that it must be a 7-month to the first. But if she gives a child after 8 months, it must be a 9-month baby for the first husband, because it couldn't be an 8-month baby of a 9-month gestation to husband B. So why do we need to wait 3 months? Avoid waiting only 2 months, and then you don't need to wait 3 months, because then you can go ahead and marry a woman after only 1 month of her divorce. Or I could say another thing, because inami, I think you're not taking something into consideration. Even if she would give birth after 8 months, it still might be that it was a child of the second husband. Because I don't understand, why are you being so simplistic over here? And this, of course, is the simplicity that we ignore the fact that she might have been pregnant from before. I mean, who's to say she got pregnant right away? Maybe she got pregnant a month after she got married. Then she became pregnant, and now it's 8 months after the marriage, but 7 months after conception, and therefore could certainly be the 7 month gestation of husband B. So that doesn't prove a darn thing. Okay, says Igmar, true. But look, she could still wait 2.5 months, right? Because if she gives birth 7 months after those 2.5 months, so then you're right, it must be a 7 month child of the second husband, and it would have started a little bit later. If, however, she gives birth after 6.5 months, then we know, well, how do you like that? She was pregnant before. And this is a 9 month baby to her first husband. But it can't be a 6.5 month baby of a 7 month pregnancy gestation, because it wouldn't have survived, right? Because we say that even an 8 month baby doesn't survive in a 9 month gestation. So how would a 6 month baby survive in a 7 month gestation? Nah, says Gemara, that it's all very nice to think that, but it's not true. And in fact, the din is that inamila shito palga yolda, even if she gives birth after 6.5 months, it could still be the second husband's child. Because as Marzutra explained, even though we have a machloket, whether a yoledet litisha, so even though there's a shita that says you cannot have a partial gestation if this is part of a 9 month full gestation, even that mandiyamar holds that despite the fact that the yoledet letish'a will not be able to give birth to a viable child if it's less than full gestation, which is called eina yoledet lemekuta'im, but if she is carrying a 7 month gestation, she does not need the entire time. And we see this from the pasuk yolda l'shiv'a, she could be yoledet lemekuta'im. We know this from the story of Tamar, because it says over there, this is from Chana. We know this from Chana, who was pregnant for, as it says, tkufot hayamim, and the tkufot hayamim means two tkufot, which each one of which, of course, is 1/4 of the year. So that gives us the 6 months plus yamim, 2 days. So that means that the minimum of tkufot is shtayim, the minimum of yamim is shtayim, and that means that Chana gave birth to Shmuel after a 6 month and 2 days gestational period, and obviously Shmuel survived. So that proves that if she is a 7 month gestation, she can actually have a viable child before the end of the full gestation. So that's not going to give you the information you're looking for. Okay. But how about just waiting a couple of days, or maybe a week or two? It's sort of about Locus Rashi and Tosis, what the issue is over here, about why we would say a week or two, but Rashi says a week or two. I understand, says Tosis, why we need to have enough time for the sperm to be able to work as conception. And we have three, after all, we have 72 hours survival of sperm, and therefore she might have conceived at the end of those. So I understand 3 days, okay, fine. But as far as 2 weeks, why 2 weeks? So a little bit more time, says Tosis. But whatever it is, so let her wait a little bit of time. And then after 3 months pass, okay, so then why don't we have her checked for pregnancy? So if she is checked over by a gynecologist, so now he will be able to tell if she's pregnant or not. If she's not showing any sign of pregnancy at the end of 3 months, so obviously she wasn't pregnant when it was that she got married. And then there will be mafkin ben zera lezera, right? Now, it's true that before we said that, we had this just before, like a week ago. So we had that is certainly a miut of nashim where we don't know that she's pregnant after 3 months, and that if the guy went ahead and married her and turned out she was pregnant, remember we had that whole discussion in the Gemara, what happens if she was pregnant? But the Mefarshim explained we're dealing with two totally different issues over here. There we were talking about not a gynecologist. We were talking about her showing, literally, her showing that people can tell that she's pregnant by the size of her stomach extension. So we know that her womb is already swelling. That's not what we're talking about over here. That indeed is easy to miss. We're talking about a gynecological examination. Now, that examination is going to be done, which is based on hormones. And the hormones do not lie. And now we're going to be able to tell the hormones because we can tell changes in the structure of the breasts, nipples, and so on, which are always caused by hormones. And if we give her that kind of examination, then we are going to find out if she was pregnant, and that we can rely on. So why not do that? Why do we have to wait for 3 months? Says the Gemara, we never have a married woman going to a gynecologist for an intimate examination just because you want to get married earlier. I'm sorry. That's not polite. The Ainbot Kinatan is so old, so we don't put them in there for intimate examinations to be poked around by somebody. Shaloyid Ganua Baalayim, because husbands don't like that kind of thing. Okay, so can't we do the other check? Let's check her out by the way that she walks. The way that she walks? Yes, because if you take a platform, you put sand in this, have her walk across the platform, and then you can see how her foot penetrates the sand. And this is what they'll tell you when they're pretending to give you these new, brand new quality midrasim. You know, you walk on a gel, the computer figures it out, gives you the midras, you don't pay, the Kupat Cholim pays, you don't get a very good midras, but what can you do? Anyway, so you can do that with her too, and you can check the way that she's walking and the additional weight that's pressing down on her foot and the way the foot spreads, and that's not intimate, so it's not going to make anybody nervous, right? So let's check that out. Amar Rami Bar Chama, no. She doesn't want you to know that she's pregnant. Now, she can't do anything much about the checking of her hormones, obviously, but she wants everybody to believe that this new little baby is, of course, the baby of her new husband. I mean, it's all she needs is to have a baby from the first husband, and this new husband is now stuck with her kid from her previous marriage. She wants this child to be happily at home with the father. It's not really the father, but when he dies, this kid is going to inherit all of his money, you know. Okay, that's what biology does to people, turns them into little liars, and this way she's going to try to present herself as not being pregnant, and so she's going to be very careful the way she walks so that it doesn't appear that she's pregnant. Okay, so therefore, we need 3 months. Okay, all of this discussion has been to determine who the child is, but you haven't explained to me why it is that even if we know that she's pregnant, you can't marry her. What is that all about? So, what if it's known and obvious that she's pregnant? So let her get married to the other guy. And the other guy says, I don't mind being married to somebody who's pregnant from this other man, from her first husband. Don't bother me. So fine. So what's the yisr? I don't get it. And yet we know that it says, Beferish in the Brice, Aloma Tanya, Lo yisa adam uberet chavero umeneket chavero. It is prohibited to marry a woman impregnated by somebody else, or a woman who is nursing a child that is not your own child. And if he does, then he's going to have to give her a divorce, and he's not allowed to remarry her. Remember, that was Rabbi Meir's sheet. He was very machbid because you were over on this issue. What's the problem? No, that's something else. We are worried that Shemate Aseh Ubra Sandal. We're worried that she might possibly be re-impregnated, which would cause now a second fetus to grow and to damage the fetus that she's carrying by pressing additional pressure on it. It will turn into looking like a non-formed sandal, which is similar to the name of a kind of fish, but whatever. If that's the case, says the Gemara, so then why do we allow people to have intimacy with their own wife if she's pregnant? So even if it's his own child, it should be usur to have sex during pregnancy. Well, why is that a problem? I don't understand. We said before that you always use contraceptives if a woman is pregnant to make sure she doesn't get pregnant again. That was one shita. And then we had the Chachamim who say you don't need to use contraceptives because, look, we're not talking about something that happens very often. You know, it's a big newspaper thing when it happens. So I told you they had this big article in Time magazine about a case like that. So what's the big deal? You know, just rely on Hashgacha and figure Shomer P'soim Hashem. So Ilaman Diomer Min Hashamayim Yirachemu Min Hashamayim Yirachemu. So why not? So therefore, for yourself, it would be okay. So what's the difference? So then to marry a woman who's pregnant is the same thing. Use contraceptives. Why are we worried about her getting re-pregnant? So according to the Mandi Omar, b'moch, or according to the Mandi Omar, yeah, look, you know, what's the level of the risk? So it's the same thing over here. The Mandi Omar, min ha-shamayim mirachemu, min ha-shamayim mirachemu. Okay, says the Gemara, then apparently there's another issue. We're worried about the fact that during intercourse, this guy will be supporting himself on this woman's womb, which is now big, fat, filled with baby, and baby will get damaged. Maybe that's the problem. So, elamishum dechasa. So we're worried that he might actually end up damaging the baby. I don't understand. You're driving me nuts. So then if it's his own baby, it's the same thing. Did you ever hear that it's prohibited to have intercourse during pregnancy? Well, his own baby, he's got to be careful. I mean, he doesn't want to crush his own little baby, does he? So, didei chayes eluye. Oh, come on. I mean, you suspect the guy that he would actually try to hurt a baby? He wouldn't be careful, even if it's not his own baby? So he would also be merachem on the fetus over here, so that can't be the reason either. Okay, fine. You know what it is? It's a completely different issue. The issue is this. A woman who is pregnant is assumed that she's going to be delivering a viable child and that then she will be nursing that child. Okay, now, that's the problem. Because if you impregnate her and we're allowing you to marry her now, okay, so fine. We're not worried she'll get pregnant now, whatever you said. We're not worried you're going to inadvertently crush the fetus by not being careful during intercourse. We're not worried. But we certainly are worried that afterwards, now that she's your wife and you've been living with her for all of this time, that she will get pregnant during nursing and that will cause her to go off her milk. And then the child will not have the nourishment that the child needs. And that's considered to be dangerous. So in order to avoid that, we said, if she's pregnant, don't marry her because you may end up ruining her milk. So then it's the same issue of your own child, right? So we should say, do not have intercourse with your own wife if she's pregnant because she may end up become pregnant and ultimately you'll kill the baby by not having milk. Or don't sleep with a woman who is nursing. I mean, we don't have any of these dinim. Yeah, but if it's your own child, so he'll pay for Similac, you know. So he'll be mamash mislav bebeitzim v'chalav. So then I don't get it. So then if it's her child, he'll do the same thing. He'll buy Similac for her child. No, he'll say he doesn't have enough money for Similac. After all, they're rationing Similac in American supermarkets because that third world country no longer has any distribution. So how's he going to get hold of Similac? It's worth who knows how much, right? So he's not going to invest in that, and he won't give her the money. What do you mean? Okay, so if he won't give her the money, she can sue the estate of her first husband. And because they have to provide child support, it's his kid, so why doesn't she just go ahead and sue the estate? Amar Abaya, because women don't sue. That's why. You're right. She should, and she could get the money, but because we know psychologically it's very difficult for women to start up now with lawyers, going to court, I don't know, forget it, we'll manage somehow. And you know that old story of we'll manage somehow. The end result is the car is dead. We'll manage somehow because the engine light came on, but we'll manage somehow. I'm not too embarrassed to go into a service station. We'll manage somehow. Thank you. So when she's sitting there at the side of the road and the smoke is coming out of her burnt out engine, we'll manage. So she'll do the same thing with her kid. It's not only the car, let me tell you. So we'll manage somehow. And meanwhile, the kid is dead. So Isha Boshala Vola Beidin Vohoreget Et Bana. Basically, she'll take a chance on her kid's life. All right. Now, the Mishnah says, it makes no difference whether this woman is a virgin or she's not a virgin. It doesn't matter whether she was a nesu'ah or whether she was a arusah, whether she was married with just by getting a ring or whether they had already consummated the marriage. Last I heard, women married with rings unconsummated are called virgins. And women married with chuppas and the rest of the night are called bu'ulot, non-virgins. Now, why are we spelling this out when we've got six different cases in the Mishnah and they're all the same issue? Is she a virgin or not a virgin? I mean, you started like you listed, you know, whether she's a betula, whether she's a beula, whether her husband had died, whether her husband had gotten divorced, whether she was married before as a nesuah, whether she's married. It's all the same thing, honey babes. Just tell me the issue is she a virgin or not? I can figure out the details, you know? So why does the Mishnah make them separate issues? Omer of Yehuda, gentlemen, you're misreading the Mishnah. The Mishnah's not a list of six cases. The Mishnah's two cases. Betulot or non-betulot. That's all that concerns us. And then it's explaining to you whether they were betulot from a death of a husband or a divorce from a husband, which means whether they had lost their husbands from a state of erisin or a state of nisuin. So it's just explaining the case. But the single issue is betulah or non-betulah. Now, one day, Rabbi Elazar did not get to the Beis HaMedrash. And he meets up with Rav Asi. So he asks Rav Asi, so what happened today in the Beis HaMedrash? So Rav Asi said to him, Rabbi Yochanan came along and he said, the halacha is like Rabbi Yossi, who says that if she had only been married with erisin, she can go ahead and get married now immediately because the assumption is that they didn't sleep together. And if she was married benisuin, she can at least get married today, but just not consummate the marriage. And there you won't have any of these problems. And even though Rabbi Yehuda said exactly the same thing, why did he paskin like Rabbi Yossi? Because remember the klal is Rabbi Yossi nimuko imo. So I wanted to paskin like this because I'm semich on that klal of psak of nimuko imo. So since I'm not going to end up being confused about who the father was, there's no problem, and that's not halacha. Says the Gemara, so wait a minute. Are you trying to tell me that the one who argues on Rabbi Yossi is a das yachid? Because the din of nimuko imo is not to go against a rabbin. Our Mishnah has a Tanakama over here and says, I don't care if she's a betula or a beula, and you're telling me that we should pass it against the Tanakama? So that must mean that you know that the Tanakama is only an individual? Says the Gemara, yes, I do know that, because indeed, Vatanya, it says in the Braita. In the event that a woman was always, she was one of these girls, she never felt comfortable with her husband, she's constantly running away to daddy. So here she runs away to daddy, she's been there for 6 months, you know, and then her husband dies, or he finally sends her a get, you know. Or, Oshayala Kaspe Beit Bala, or she's been like, really out of sorts with her husband, and she doesn't, even though they live nearby, but she doesn't go to see him, maybe for 6 months. Or maybe her husband's been in prison for 6 months. Or maybe her husband was too old, or he's been too sick to actually be able to have relations with her. Or maybe she was too old. I don't know. Maybe she was sick. Whatever. She couldn't have been too old, because then, well, that's the case that's coming later. So maybe she was too sick, or maybe she miscarried after her husband died, so we know she's certainly not pregnant again. Or maybe she was an akara, who was missing. Akara means literally Akara ne'ekar, the rechem was akur from her. Or she was too old, or she was too young, or she was sterile. Or maybe she's eneru'ya leled, not through hormonal sterility, but through some kind of permanent birth control mechanism. In any of these cases, you still need to wait 3 months. That's Rebbe Meir. Thank you very much. And now we know who the Tanakama is. Rebbe Meir, who says, I don't care whether there was any serious possibility of pregnancy or not. This is one takana, and it applies across the board. We can't start judging the cases separately, because then people are going to not recognize the takana as applying to their particular case. Rebbe Yehuda, remember, was Matu Le'ares, and Lina Semiyat. Okay, so then you see that the Tana Kama of the Mishnah, who insists that it doesn't matter, even if she's a virgin, it doesn't matter, that's Rebbe Meir. So Rebbe Yochanan was arguing, and he said, we paskin indeed, like Rebbe Yossi, because of the Muko Imo. That's what he was saying. Omer Rebbe Chia Bar Abba, I can tell you something. Rebbe Yochanan changed his mind afterwards, and he said that the halacha is really like the Tana Kama. And Rabbi Yosef said, I know why he changed his mind. I can tell you why. Because Iodarbe, it's basically all Barnea's fault. Because it was because of the Brita in Barnea's neighborhood, which is the Kerem B'Yavne. And over there, they published this Brita that said, the Tanya, Omer Rabbi Yishmael ben Osher Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, Shamati mipi chachomim b'Kerem B'Yavne, Kulan tzrichot lamtin shlosha chodashim. Now that meant that there was a court decision in Kerem B'Yavne, which means that it was a rov, it was not Rebbe Meir. And it was an actual rabbim that were chalak on Rebbe Yossi and Rebbe Yehuda. And because he heard that, so he said, oh, okay, now that I know that it was a rov, then I obviously cannot paskin just with Rebbe Yossi's nimuko imo. And because of that, he changed his mind and said the halacha is like the chachomim. Now, when they heard what Rabbi Yochanan had paskened originally, that the halacha is like Rabbi Yossi, so he told Rabbi Zrika, do me a favor, will you? When you get to go to see Rabbi Abohu, could you ask him how he understands this psak of Rabbi Yochanan? Could Rabbi Yochanan really have paskened like Rabbi Yossi? If Rabbi Yochanan himself says that the halacha is like a stam mishnah, and our Mishnah says, Kol Anashim, I don't care what they are. I don't care if they're virgins. Lo yinasu v'lo yitasu ad shiyulem shlosha chodashim achat betulot v'achat be'ulot. So how can Rabbi Yochanan say the halacha is like Rabbi Yossi because of the Muko Imo, and then go against the din that a stam Mishnah is always the correct source for the psak? So Rabbi Zreika did. He went ahead, like Rabbi Yirmiya asked him to do, and boy, did he get over the head. And he asked Rabbi Abo, can you explain this? And Rabbi Abo, I said, well, I can tell you this. Anybody who asked a dumb question like that has got a bit of a problem who's lo chosh lekimche. He doesn't care what it is that's coming out of his coffee grinder over there. He just keeps grinding and grinding and grinding away, even though it makes no sense. Is that an espresso or is it not an espresso? So this is a crazy guy. He's just going to keep grinding while his espresso machine is working. I mean, he's out of touch. So therefore, he's asking a ridiculous question. This is not a stam Mishnah. This is a stam followed by the machlokas with Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi on the Tana Kama. That's called the stam v'achakach machloket. And everybody knows that in that case, ein halacha k'stam. Was he mixing up a case of Rabbi Yochanan asking like a stam Mishnah when this is not a stam Mishnah? The Omer of Papa Vitema, Rabbi Yochanan himself, that if you have a Mishnah which first presented a machloket, then we find another Mishnah that is kistam, then halacha kistam. But if first we introduce a halacha like we did over here with Rabbi Meir Sheet and we presented it as a Tana Kama as stam, and then at the end of that Mishnah we introduce the machlokas of the Sheetas of Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda, then ain't halacha kistam. So why in the world would not Rabbi Yochanan paskin aliba to Rabbi Yossi before hearing this business about the Kerem B'Yavne Baraita? Anyway, there was Mistamach Vayelza Rabbi Abo. So Rabbi Abo was actually, he was quite old, and he was leaning on his valet, who was Rabbi Nachum, who was Zercha, to be walking with him. And they would walk along, and during that entire period when Rabbi Nachum was involved with Rabbi Abo, he would collect various shitas that he was able to learn from him, and he would keep track of things that I heard while walking with Rabbi Abo. This is not to be confused with that book that was Tuesdays with Maurice. That was something else. But it was basically the original. So he went ahead and he published his Mondays with Rabbi Abot. So he was Mankid Ve'azel Hilchatamines. He was collecting all of these various halakhas from Rabbi Abot. And he asked him different things. So once he asked them, what's the din of a machlokas v'achakakstam? My. So Rabbi Abo said, Alokha Kistam. What's the din of Stam Ve'achakach Machlokas? And Rabbi Abo said, then ain't Alokha Kistam. Meaning, it doesn't have to be, not that it's Bedafka not. How about if we have a Stam in the Mishnah, and then a Braisa presents a Machlokas? Then Rabbi Abuah said, well, the very fact that Rabbi avoided stating the machlokas in the Mishnah means that the halacha is like the Stam Mishnah. And what about the other way around? What if we have a machlokas in the Mishnah, and then we have a brisa that presents one shita as the Stam halacha? So Rabbi Abuah said, what kind of question is that? I mean, Rabbi, who was the author of the Mishnah, he did not make it a Stam Mishnah. You're telling me Rabbi Chiya, who was a Talmud of Rabbi, and he decided, let me tell you something. If Rabbi didn't know it, how did Rabbi Chiya know it? So if Rabbi lo shina'a, then Rabbi Chiya mi nayin lo. And therefore, it is not nogeya. I ignore the Braita. Now we'll examine some, tomorrow, of course, some interesting questions that seem to run counter to this. But meanwhile, we have a satisfactory day in which we have finally gotten through all of the issues of these chashashais of pregnancies and the gezeras that have to do with not marrying, not being miyabim, not doing chalitza, what the din is if you did do the chalitza, what happens if she does turn out to be pregnant. Every possible variation on the theme is behind us, and we can breathe a sigh of relief and get on with our business, Bezrat Hashem, tomorrow.